Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this Euractiv online event, which is kindly supported by PKEE, the Polish Electricity Industry Association. Today's discussion on the European climate law is timely in more ways than one. First, the European Parliament is holding a debate on the topic this week with a view to adopting its position on the EU's objective of becoming the world's first climate-neutral continent by 2050. But even more importantly, perhaps, the European Commission is now preparing to table new climate targets, not for 2050, but for 2030, which is around the corner. And with those targets, a whole raft of new measures will need to be adopted in every areas of the economy, ranging from agriculture to transport and, of course, energy. So what does this all mean for Europe's energy transition? How can the electricity sector in particular adapt on time to reach the 2030 targets? To discuss those issues today, I have the pleasure of welcoming a high-level panel of speakers. So let me introduce Clara de la Torre from the European Commission's DG Klima, Ville Niinistö, a Green MEP from Finland, Clotilde Armand, a Liberal MEP from Romania, who sits on the Parliament's Budget Committee, Matthias Buch from think tank Agora Energiewende, and Pavel Sjosh, Vice President of PKEE. We're also expecting the Deputy Climate Minister of Poland to join us in a few minutes. He's being delayed a little bit, but he's going to give us a keynote speech when he joins, but we won't wait for him and go straight to the discussion while he is trying to join. So welcome to all of our panelists today. We'll start the conference with short opening statements from all the panelists, and then we'll move on to a Q&A session, which is also open to questions from the audience. To ask a question, just click on the Q&A button, which is at the bottom of your screen, and put your question in writing. I'll try and take as many of them as possible. I think that's all for me when it comes to the housekeeping rules. So let me pass the floor immediately now to Mrs. De La Torre. The floor is yours.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much. To Euractiv for organizing this very timely and interesting panel, and for, of course, for giving us the opportunity to be part of it. As you said very well, we are in a moment, in a crucial moment, with an ambitious program with the Green Deal that the Commission put on the table nearly 1 year ago, last December. The motto of which is Europe becoming the first climate neutral continent by 2050. The first thing what we did after presenting the Green Deal was, as promised by as in the work program of this commission, is making the proposal of the climate law to enshrine in law precisely the 2050 climate neutrality. And why was this important? It was important per se, but it was important because it would, from the very beginning, give an idea of the direction of travel, give signals to the investors, to business, on the predictability of what was going to happen, and to show in the world the European Union commitment, and to ensure as well transparency and accountability of all the ecosystem of actions, regulatory, non-regulatory, that needed to be done to reach that objective. Of course, as we have seen in the recovery package, in the meantime, the COVID arrived, and of course, the Green Deal remains the growth strategy for the Union. And even if, of course, in the short term, we need to address the terrible health consequences of this pandemic, we have to as well address the economic recovery hand in hand with the economic, social transformation that is needed for a climate neutral continent. And it's an important message that I hope we share, and that I would like that is kept in everybody's mind, is that becoming climate neutral and growing is not only possible, but it is mutually reinforcing. We know that in Europe we have diminished emissions since 1990, and despite that, or thanks to that probably, the economy has grown by 60% in the 90s. So that's one of my messages, is we need to grow in a sustainable manner. The legislative work, as you were saying, of the climate law is ongoing. I would like to thank the members of parliament that are being so committed with these discussions, of course, the council. And we will have, as you were saying, Simon, we will be soon presenting the Commission proposals on the reinforcement of the targets for 2030, because to reach 2050 climate neutrality, we cannot wait until there. And we know that even if we had already targets of diminishing 40% the emissions since 1990 in 2030, we have to reinforce that ambition if we want to become climate neutral. So soon the Commission will be presenting its proposals to increase the ambition from 50 to 55% as foreseen in the work plan of the Commission. And we are, of course, analyzing in detail, we are about to finish that, the potential effects in terms of economic and social consequences of such an increase of ambition. We have done that with a big public consultation. We have received more than 4,000 replies, which reassures us on the importance of for everyone of what is being done in the European Union. And last message, to start with, we are now in front of a once in a generation opportunity. There are the funds that have been allocated to the recovery after the pandemics. We have to go to become a climate neutral economy. Let us be mindful of how we are investing the resources that we have, because investments of today will be there for many years, and therefore they need to be totally in line with what we have put ourselves as an objective. That's all for starting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Clara. Let me turn now to Ville Niinistö.
Thank you very much, and good morning from the European Parliament here in Brussels. Some of us are working remotely, but I'm personally here in Brussels today. And we hope to get things moving properly also on the climate decision making this autumn, even though we also have to address the corona crisis and the economic stagnation that has followed. Obviously, these two are also interlinked. There are some who question whether the Green Deal and climate focus should be EU top priority at this moment, but obviously we think that this is crucial to realize that we can't leave addressing the climate crisis while tackling the corona crisis. We have to do these both things at the same time. Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is obviously a very crucial autumn also for climate decision making globally, because the Glasgow meeting, the COP, will decide next spring on how we can achieve the Paris targets, and all countries and country groups should increase their climate targets in order to be in line with the Paris commitments. So the EU this autumn will make a decision on the 2030 climate emission reduction target, increasing it, And obviously this will be a way of showing leadership also for the global negotiations. So this is very important this autumn for Europe and the climate action globally. Also, when you look at the economy, the interesting thing is I personally am both in ITRE committee and ENVI committee. And ITRE as an industrially focused committee often has been seen as more conservative when it comes to climate ambition. But even ITRE committee voted yesterday a position where majority of ITRE is behind at least a 55% emission reduction by 2030. And this will be enshrined in the climate law, is the opinion of ITRE. And also we want all European countries, member countries, to be carbon neutral by 2050. Obviously, this approach comes from also a lot of business moving towards the direction where they see that having proper goals and having proper tools to achieve them is actually good for an economic investments and good for European jobs. And this is what we are trying to achieve. We try to create Green Deal while making sure that it's European industries and the European economy and European energy companies that have the breakthrough technologies to make the whole global economy carbon neutral. And that means that a lot of the funding from the recovery fund has to be focused also now on climate investments. And I think countries like Poland, who are emerging economically in a longer term, have a lot of investment focus, obviously have a good chance of getting a lot of investments into renewables and the energy grids, electrification. And I think this is a good chance for these utilities in these kind of countries to also get economic viability while addressing the climate emissions. On Friday, the ENVI committee will vote on the final proposal for the climate law to the session of the European Parliament. And I think it's very likely that we can get even a 65% emission reduction target by 2030 in the ENVI committee. So that will put pressure on the Council to at least go forward with their climate commitments, and then the negotiations will be decided between the parties this autumn. But there will be a lot of things happening. It's obvious. The question is just is that how we make sure that the economic flow of money that's going into the European economy and the climate commitments, they go hand in hand. And this is the big task for us in this autumn. Also, one additional point which is interesting is that we will most likely push also for carbon budgeting, which means that we will also have a target for 2050, how much carbon European economy can emit to the atmosphere while staying true to the Paris targets. So there will be also some kind of a baseline for emission reductions after 2030. So this carbon budget will lead businesses to be more, that they can predict the norms and cost of carbon emissions more easily when they know what the budget is available for emissions in the coming decades. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ville Niinistö. I'm being told now that the Deputy Climate Minister of Poland has joined us, so I will give him the floor immediately for the keynote. Sir, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you very much, and I'm very sorry for being late. I don't want to disturb the whole discussion you were having. I heard only the end of the intervention of Mr. Niinistö, it's a very important discussion we are having now on our climate ambition and why we are seeing the discussions ongoing in the Parliament, the reflection in the Commission on our 2030 targets, but we are as you may have heard, we are also working in Poland on our plans how to transform our energy sector. We just presented this week our national energy policy, looking forward until 2040 to major changes we need to introduce in our energy system to transform it, relying on three main pillars: First of all, to ensure a just transition for all the regions that are most affected by this policy. You know, it is a very big challenge in Poland, given the number of people working in fossil fuel related industry and in mines, and we want to make sure that this transition is actually beneficial for all Polish citizens, for all the regions in Poland. And this is obviously a place where the where there's a big role also for EU institutions to play. We know that when the Commission assessed the current 2030 target, you were already seeing very big differences in terms of the costs it represents for different member states. The cost, for instance, for Poland are twice the European average to reach the current 2030 target. For Bulgaria, it's three times the European average. For all the poorest member state, the burden of that transition is much heavier. And especially in times of crisis, we need to make sure that the policies we design will not create additional burdens for our poorest and most vulnerable citizen. And this is why we think also this issue of, you know, our ability to mobilize appropriate investments, to mobilize the financing, the resources that are needed to make that transformation happen should be a key element of the climate law. We have a bit of a tendency in the EU sometimes to focus very much on the figures of the targets and then not really discussing and not really thinking of how are we going to be implementing those targets. And we think this is this would be really a shame, because if we don't do that, it will remain on only on paper. And it will be very difficult for our countries to make that transformation happen. Obviously, there is also a very significant role for our leaders to give the main indications of these measures, these steps that we will need to take in the future to reach those targets. And I talked about financing, but that's not the only measures we need to take at European level. We will need to take measures in different sectors to accompany and to enable that transition by, for instance, introducing standards or things like that. And there is here, we think, also a role for the discussion at European level is important to make sure that we all have a common vision of where we want to go and how we want to reach these targets. It will be obviously very important to look also at how we can improve the functioning of the ETS, and will be putting forward ideas also around that. But to make sure that the ETS system is also enabling the investments where they are needed, where they can have the biggest impact for emission reductions, and where they are also most needed in terms of the ability of that specific sector or that specific area to bear the cost of this transformation. And finally, just to underline once more, we are committed also as Poland to join our forces in that collective exercise and ambition to reach a climate neutral EU by 2050. And we think that this will be possible if we have a clear plan how to get us there, including specific measures for the most for making sure that the most vulnerable of our citizens are not affected by additional costs and expenses associated with that transition, but making sure that that we are actually helping them and helping them to move forwards a cleaner energy and climate neutrality for the whole economy. Thank you.
Minister, I understand you're not going to be able to stay with us for the rest of the panel discussion, so maybe let me put one or two questions before you leave. First of all, there's been announcements you said this week about new objectives for Poland. Can you explain also what will be the implications for the energy sector? Because I understand there's an overhaul which is underway there with potential mergers between different companies which are owned by the government. So maybe you can say a few words about that, what is in the pipeline there. And another question, with the announcements that you've made this week, does that mean now that Poland will officially back the EU objective of climate neutrality by 2050?
So our sister ministry, the Ministry of Foreign Assets, that is looking at the corporate structure of these of the state-owned, at least energy companies. But we are looking more in this energy policy at the sector as a whole, not precluding what is the role of any particular company, but more at what needs to happen in the sector itself and in the Polish economy at large to enable that that transition. Our aim is really to build a new energy system. Today, more than 70% of our blocks have more than 30 years old. So we need to invest, and we want to invest in a system that can provide us stable supply at reasonable prices of zero emission energy. And we think that the system can rely on nuclear energy for the base and a strong increase of renewables, mostly offshore wind and photovoltaics, where we see a huge potential, 8 to 11 gigawatts for offshore wind by 2040, and from 10 to 16 even for photovoltaics by the same time. But obviously, these investments will take some time. So we would hope to get to a position where we would have 1 in 3 megawatt hour produced in 2030 coming from renewables, and then to have by 2040 a whole second new zero emission system of a comparable size of what we have today, that is around 40 gigawatt of installed capacity. And that would mean that we are really on track to make that that shift. And obviously this is something that climate neutrality is something that we are committed to. We signed the Paris Agreement, and we have we were one of the first even to ratify the Paris Agreement before it even entered into force. And we decided to go for that objective also in our strategy to lay the ground for the transformation of the entire Polish economy, and that will be our contribution to that common effort to make the EU climate neutral by 2050.
Right, so I understand this is now a formal endorsement of the climate neutrality target also at the Polish national level. Is that right?
National energy policy is being put forward by the climate ministry to be approved hopefully in the coming weeks by the government. We're in the final stage of discussions. But we are definitely decided to make this this transformation in Poland possible, and to make that that transformation contribute to the EU goal of becoming climate neutral as a whole by 2050.
Okay, thank you very much, Minister, for joining us today. I understand you're going to leave us, so thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Let me turn now and going back to the panel discussion that we had started before the keynote speech. So we had just finished with Ville Niinistö. So let me turn now to Clotilde Armand, Liberal MEP from Romania. Clotilde, the floor is yours now for some introduction remarks.
Thank you. As we've just heard, the green transition will come at different costs for different member states. Our goal in the Green Deal is to avoid that those who pollute less pay for those who pollute more. I'm an MEP from Romania. Romania emits 6 tons of greenhouse gas per capita per year. For Germany and the Netherlands, for instance, the figure is roughly double, while for Luxembourg, it's more than 3 times higher. These figures actually reflect closely the differences in GDP per capita, hence in standards of living. Western Europe hosts more industrial sites, transport hubs. Their economic activity is more carbon intensive. They get more profit from carbon and they should bear more of the transition costs. Eastern European member states were kindly, normally proposed to abandon their fossil fuel industry in order to invest in renewables, which is great. It sounds great. It is correct. But some member states simply cannot afford to go completely green overnight. They lack resources for new installations or replacement jobs for their thousands of energy workers. Such a brutal transition would mean diverting a disproportionate part of GDP away from education, from hospitals, or basic infrastructure towards photovoltaics made in China. Our public opinion wants this transition, but would find these sacrifices unfair, at least until we achieve economic convergence with the Western member states. Relatively poorer countries have always been greener than the richer ones. We have been greener because we have polluted less. And we want to become greener and greener. On many aspects, we are greener. In order to reach climate neutrality by 2050, we need financial solidarity based on pragmatism, but also on fairness. This is something that that we in the European Parliament were trying to achieve, including with this report on Sustainable Europe Investment Plan, a very important report for which I am shadow rapporteur. So as a conclusion, we are committed, we want to reach climate neutrality by 2050, but for this, it is normal we need financial solidarity based on pragmatism, not on objectives coming top down, and also based on fairness. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Clotilde. Let me turn now to Matthias Böck from Agora Energiewende. Matthias, the floor is yours.
Good morning and welcome to all of you out there. Just a few points to kick off the debate from our side. We will present actually tomorrow in a webinar a new study that we have done on how Europe could achieve minus 55% greenhouse gas reductions by 2030. And in this report, of course, a major focus is also on issues of solidarity and how to share the burden of this additional effort. And indeed, one of our suggestions in this debate is to, particularly in the effort sharing sectors, take a more serious look at new solidarity mechanisms for sharing the additional burden. Why? Also because, and there I would take issue a bit with the previous speaker, given the where we are today and the sharing of the emission reduction efforts in the non-ETS sectors, it is important in order to enter a credible pathway to climate neutrality by 2050 that also member states with lower GDP per capita are taking an additional effort and are accelerating significantly over the next years. But of course, this is, as the previous speaker said, also contingent on more dedicated support for that effort. Now, however you look at climate neutrality and accelerating climate ambition by 2030, it is obvious that Europe will see a faster phasing out of coal. So we're discussing coal phase out across the European continent towards 2030. We will publish a study next week in which we're looking at what we call the lignite triangle. So the phasing out of lignite in Germany, Poland, and the Czech Republic as a region. Why? Because there's a high level of interconnectedness in the region. And given that the phasing out of lignite is at the heart of the coal phase out in Europe because of the very high emission of lignite, it is very important to look at this as a regional strategy. Now, let me just pull out a few messages from this research that we will publish next week and also present in the webinar. The first, of course, is technically this is feasible. It is feasible to phase out lignite by 2032 in what we call the lignite triangle. The second important message is it will not cost more. It will not cost more for wholesale electricity prices as well as for power system costs. It will not cost more to accelerate the lignite phase out and to phase out by 2032. And it will also from, and I think this is an important debate also in Poland, but in also in other countries, it will not increase but it, import dependency, but actually decrease electricity import dependency in the countries. Why? Because we see the phasing out of coal essentially being replaced by renewables. There is a role of gas in order to ensure power system adequacy, but there is a need for a debate how much gas and which types of gas do we actually need in order to ensure power system adequacy. We do not, I think I need to say this, we do not foresee a role for new nuclear in the region. Why? Because of the very high costs compared to alternative investments in renewables, and this cost delta will only increase over the next decade. And secondly, because of the technical uncertainty by when new nuclear would actually be in operation and the need to replace the lignite that is being phased out by other alternatives that secure electricity security of supply. Now, in order to get there, and I think this is important when we're discussing increased climate ambition, we're discussing increasing prices in the emissions trading system, so more economic pressure on particularly coal to leave the system sooner. This will not work, and I think Ms. Armand said this, unless there is a management, a political management of the transition that takes regions and citizens in the region through the transition. So it is really critical to plan ahead. There's a lot of planning that needs to be done by the regions and the member states in the next months, actually. Why? Because transition planning is critical also to be able to access all the EU funding that will become available with a new European budget that starts in January next year. And this, above all, the Just Transition Fund, but also very significantly, some of the funding from the Recovery and Resilience Fund, which is much, much larger in absolute numbers than the Just Transition Fund that is being debated by Parliament and Council. So I leave it here. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthias, for this detailed introduction. Let me turn now to the final panelist, Pavel Sjosh from PKE. Go ahead, the floor is yours.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, everybody. The main challenges ahead of us is how to deliver the EU goal of achieving climate neutrality, while the starting points of the EU member states differ significantly. The principle of a just and fair energy transition must be the guidance in creating financial instruments supporting its implementation. For Poland, where more than 75% of energy mix is still coal-based, I mean coal and lignite, every possible increase in climate target needs to be mitigated by the robust financial support, compensating increased costs and accelerating the most important investments. PGE Capital Group, the biggest company in the Polish energy sector, is currently implementing the most ambitious investment programs in the field of renewable energy expansion, which include the construction of 2.5 gigawatts of capacity in offshore wind farms in the Baltic Sea by 2030, and the construction of 2.5 gigawatts of PV, photovoltaic installations capacity by 2030. And that's not our last word. The key growth projects impacting the reduction of emissivity of PGE include the investments in the new gas-fired CHP units, further development in offshore wind farms, as well as energy storage facilities. As seen by our investment portfolio, the current EU ETS scheme is robust enough to ensure economic incentives for the transition to low carbon power generation. It's very important that we do not need CO2 prices to reach over 70 euro per ton, as analysis shows might happen in the even 55% emissions reduction scenario by 2030 to turn green. Our green transition is a fact. The total carbon cost for the entire Polish energy sector in the 55% emissions reduction scenario by 2030 will be 68.5 billion euro. Instead of turning green, there is a risk companies with a high share of coal-based generation fleet will turn bankrupt, leaving unaddressed social and environmental aspects. I think this should not be the outcome of the new climate law. For technical reasons, is it not possible to rely only on renewable energy sources in the next 10 years, especially when it comes to maintaining the security of supply? Therefore, natural gas should be the important element of energy transformation as an enabler of renewable energy sources integration. For the Polish energy sector, it is of utmost importance that solidarity mechanisms, such as the Modernization Fund and the solidarity pool under the EU ETS directive, should be increased proportionally to the new climate targets. It is also necessary to effectively implement the Just Transition Fund to support the transformation of regions must bump to the lignite and hard coal sectors. If the transition is unmanaged, unjust, and the inconvenient concerns are brushed aside, social resistance and unrest is the kind of blowback the leaders will have to deal with. Thank you.
Thank you, Pavel. We're now done with the initial round of statements, so let me jump in for the Q&A part of this session. We have about 45 minutes ahead of us. I will start maybe with a question to all of you about the 2030 climate objectives. It seems the European Commission is now preparing to move forward with a 55% reduction target for 2030. As you know, there's been a lot of speculation as to whether it should be 50 or 55. It seems the Commission is now going for 55. It's also what I'm hearing in the European Parliament. Now, can you maybe explain for us what the difference is between 50 and 55? What are the additional costs that this will represent? And maybe, Pavel Sjosh, you can maybe start with that.
Thank you. As I said, the reaching indirect goal in 2030 on the level 55% is the cost for all Polish entire energy sector, more over than 68.5 billion euros. So when the indirect target will be bigger on the level 65%, we will need proportionally more measures from European funds like Modernization Fund and Just Transition Fund. So for now, we are preparing also in our biggest state companies, which belong to our energy and power sector, to reach the goal on the level 55%. So we will calculate what additional costs we will have in the future, in next 10 years.
So I understand you've already started planning for a 55% target. Now, can you explain maybe what this means in terms of the number of coal power plants, the additional coal power plants that will have to be taken offline because of that decision? Do you already have an idea? Have you made some sort of evaluation of this?
No.
Pavel Sjosh?
No. Our position is that for we are ready with completely new strategy. Is completely according to new Polish energy policy. So, for example, we decided to make the green transition, and we have new investments, especially offshore wind farms on Baltic Sea. So we started this investments process with cooperation with West European partner, and also all the time we plan buy new onshore. In 2030, we as all Polish energy sector should have all offshore wind energy with 5.9 gigawatts of new capacity, onshore 10 gigawatts of new capacity, and photovoltaics next 7 gigawatts. So those are concrete investments. So our participation in RES in energy mix for all Polish energy sector should be on the level 23%. More than 23%.
Thank you very much, Pavel Sjosh, for those extra details. Let me turn now to Clara de la Torre, maybe. I understand that, obviously, you can't make official statements at this stage because the 2030 proposal is not yet on the table. But, I mean, as we've heard just now, the level of investment that is required for a country like Poland to increase its climate objectives for 2030. That amount is absolutely enormous. How does the impact assessment of the European Commission, how do you think the impact assessment will reflect this?
Thank you. Indeed, we are finalizing the communication, so the college has not adopted the communication yet, so there are still discussions on the, and also on the figures, because calculating all these figures in terms of cost and benefits is not that easy. But I would like, if you allow me, that we think indeed we have there needs to be huge investments in greener technologies, which, by the way, Europe is very much in the lead on many of these technologies, and this is why we have the Innovation Fund, which is going to help to deploy these technologies. That's something we should not forget. But let me draw your attention to one thing. Yes, we have huge costs of investments, but have we thought, and we will see that in our impact assessment, of the costs of doing nothing? Have we realized in terms of health, in terms of biodiversity, in terms of the for example, when we see with the permafrost is thawing, the horrible effects that it's going to have and that it's having already, and the cost that this bears, the cost of doing nothing is much higher than the cost of going climate neutral. And let us think also of the benefits. We will have plenty of benefits. We have better health. We have lower energy bills, because for the time being, renewable energies is has the lowest price in the energy mix. We'll also have the possibility of having reskilling workers, and we'll have, I'll come back to that in a second because it's not that easy. But we are, for example, training huge amount of engineers in Europe, which afterwards do not have a job with high added value. If we make this social and economic transformation, all this workforce that is being trained with public money in many cases will be deployed for a much better purpose. So let us, certainly huge costs, but there are also huge benefits in taking that journey.
Thank you, Clara. Let me maybe follow up with a different way maybe of phrasing the same question. I mean, we've heard about the amounts that need to be invested in a country like Poland, and it's a bit of an extreme case, obviously, because there is so much coal in Poland that needs to be replaced, and it needs to be replaced fast for climate purposes, and that requires heavy investments. Now, we know there are plenty of different initiatives that have been taken at the European level to try and make sure there is enough money actually on the table. Has the Commission made, or is it planning to make, some sort of adequacy or balance assessment between what's required in some countries, for example Poland, and what's available through the different ways of financing this at the European level or with private sector funding? Has this kind of analysis been made?
Yes, this kind of analysis is made, not to the full detail, as you can well understand, but you have seen that it's not new, since always the European policies and in particular the funding initiatives do always have to always keep in mind this solidarity. I like what Mrs. Armand said, pragmatism and solidarity aspects in the funding. This is why we have a Just Transition Fund. This is why we have a Modernization Fund for the 10 poorer countries in Europe. This is why we are we have the structural funds, which are dedicated precisely to those regions that are more in need. So I think if one thing the Commission cannot be accused is of not thinking of the difference in starting point, and we acknowledge that difficulty. The social fund has also to help, because I understand that it's easy to say, yes, we will create many high added value jobs. Certainly, and this is absolutely true, but I can understand also the worry of those that are might or will certainly be losing their jobs soon. This is why there are schemes to precisely recycle, reskill these parts of the population. And this is why it's important that investing in a sustainable future, in a greener future, has to go hand in hand with investing in education and investing in research and innovation. The climate challenge is not a challenge separate from the rest. The climate challenge is embedded in all the different policies of the Union, and the Commission is well aware of the differences and does its utmost in its proposals to reflect that. And I'm confident that the co-deciders, the Parliament and the Council, will keep that that element in the decisions.
So let me turn to the other side of the decision-making machinery at the EU level. Clotilde Armand, you're in the Parliament's Budget Committee. Have you made an assessment of the funds which are available or will be available? Because obviously the fine detail of the budget negotiations are still ongoing. Have you identified a gap maybe between what's currently on the table and what countries need to do in order to reach the coming 2030 and 2050 objectives?
Yes, we are doing this work, and this is actually the objective of the report on Sustainable Europe Investment Plan, where we are insisting very much on public-private partnership. The issue that we're facing are some of the issues that we're facing are the ones that have been mentioned. We have a very strong political will, and we have political decision makers want to enforce very fast these objectives that we have, but this has to be synchronized with the private economic cycle, in the sense that there are already some investments which have been planned, and I will give you very specific examples in gas turbines to replace coal turbines, and which are a great progress, for instance, in achieving a better technical parameters for the environment, much better, with much lower emissions. But if suddenly the political will is to say we ban everything which is gas, when gas until now was in planned in the transition period, but we want to go fast, so we say, okay, right now we don't want gas anymore. What about the private sector, who had already planned for this? So it is very good that we have this strong political will, but this political will should be correlated with the investment cycles, should be correlated with the help that the private sector is ready to, and the money that they're ready to put on the table. If from one day to another, we change the rules of the game, we don't respect this transition period where some energies were admitted. I'm talking here, I'm just taking one example, which is gas, because there have been very strong discussions on that. Gas was admitted first as a transition energy, and now in taxonomy, they're saying, no, we don't want gas anymore, but wait, we will not be able to achieve all the investments that are needed if we don't take into account the current projects which are on the table, and we don't just throw them out from with ideological objectives which are not directly connected with the reality. I actually trust very much the Commission, because the Commission knows what is going on the field. We always need very strong political will. You can imagine that political will is absolutely necessary, but it shouldn't be, this political will shouldn't be correlated, shouldn't be embedded in technical constraints which are not linked to what is happening on the field. We will achieve this, but not putting constraints which are actually not on the field, which cannot be met on the field. So I'm always saying political will is something good and we have achieved that, but at the same time we need a lot of work on the field. The dynamism should not just be on political will, it should be as well on the work which has to be done on the field with technical assistance for the countries who need that technical assistance, and we need to win CO2 ton with CO2 ton. It will not just be we publish a law and things are being done. It doesn't work that way. So let's not frighten the private sector. Let's work with it on each investment, each region, each city, each factory. This is the work that needs to be done.
Thank you, Clotilde Armand, for those remarks. Maybe I will turn to Ville Niinistö for a reaction on this. I mean, if the European Union indeed now moves forward with a 55% climate objective for 2030, that means a pretty steep reduction, which is needed very soon. And does that maybe mean that the Greens need to be a little bit more pragmatic when it comes to gas, especially when there are so much investments which are now being planned? Ville Niinistö, what is your view on this?
Well, I would like to think about this strategically in line with our long-term goals, that is carbon neutrality by 2050 and Paris targets. And I've worked a lot with business in the past, and in a country like Finland, the business world expects us to have a 55% target by 2030 and a good carbon budgeting to all emissions after that, precisely because they want to invest reliably into technologies that they will know what the policies will be in place in the coming decades. And the problem with gas is precisely the question that we will, if we allow now European money to go into gas investments, that will be stranded asset, that will be a lock-in level of emissions where it will become hugely expensive to get down emissions after these investments have been made. And we made a similar mistake in Finland 10 years ago with peat. Everybody, even in Finland nowadays, knows that peat has emissions that are in level with coal and we have to get rid of peat. But politically, 10 years ago, when I, as a Minister of the Environment, was pushing for no more peat investment in Finland because this will be against the interest of the industries and those jobs. If we invest now, we will, 10 years from now, those factories or those energy factories will be too expensive in the ETS system in Europe with emission reductions to continue. So that investment will become very expensive. And this is precisely what has happened now in Finland. We will have to close down the peat factories early, which is a good thing to do, but they were stupid investments in the to begin with. So if you think about this economically, and in the long term, and from the viewpoint of how we can create the maximum amount of European competitiveness and jobs to Eastern Europe, to Western Europe, to Northern Europe, we should invest in technologies that are world leaders, where we actually can have export markets, where we can actually create European independence. Investing in gas is also a problem vis-a-vis our relationship with Russia, for example, because a lot of European gas comes from Russia, the gas we consume, I mean. So we should try to increase energy independence in Europe by investing heavily in sustainable renewables straight away. And I think hydrogen, the green gases, obviously, are a big part of this mix. And I very much support the kind of like new analysis of the Commission that's system integration, energy storage, thinking the whole package has to be here, not just, you know, energy sector. You don't just turn the energy mix from what goes into the pipe, you change the whole dynamic. That is the big picture. And I would also like to add that carbon budgeting approach also should include a more modern way of thinking about burden sharing. I agree with a lot of the issues that the Polish utilities here raised and Clotilde also raised in practical terms. So we have to modernize also the burden sharing in the way that how productive investments can be made all around Europe. And we have to think about methane leakages and also methane emissions from agriculture. So we can ease the burden on the energy sector by looking at emission reductions also outside the field of energy. And agriculture sector is one of the areas where actually it's quite with low cost investment we can address emissions.
Thank you, Ville Niinistö. Let me turn to Matthias Berg maybe now for some views on gas as a transition fuel. If indeed we need to cut emissions much more steeply now by 2030, does that actually make the case for gas stronger as a transition fuel? Or do you think Europe and countries like Poland can immediately leapfrog to renewables?
Yes, thank you for the question. So particularly on gas, in our analysis on the coal phase out, it is in economic modeling and security of supply modeling shows that coal will predominantly be replaced by renewables, simply because of costs and the availability of this as a domestic resource. So predominantly it will be replaced by renewables. So the narrative of fossil gas being the transition fuel from coal into clean energy future, this is a false narrative, to be very clear. From a power system adequacy perspective, it needs specific analysis in which regional circumstances, for instance, also because of heating being connected in some cases, there is a need for continuous use of fossil gas for a period of time, and perhaps some very limited additional investment in backup gas capacity to ensure a power system adequacy. But to be very clear, the narrative that is still out there, gas, fossil gas being the transition fuel, is a false narrative. We are moving directly from coal to clean investments, and any investment in gas and gas infrastructure needs to be mindful of the need to become non-fossil gas in the future, as Mr. Niinistö was saying. So the possibility to convert to green gases needs to be become part of that debate. And in that context, just if you allow, Simon, one word on the budget discussion. And this goes also for gas. To me, it is important to make a clear difference about what do we use public funding for. Do we now in a situation where the clean energy transition across the board demands massive investments into the really clean technologies, in that situation, take public money to invest into another fossil technology, gas, that is not the transition really to the clean energy future? I think this is the debate. So I'm not taking issue with there could be a role for also fossil gas in some cases in the power system to ensure security of supply. But the question is, would you need EU funding in order to finance those investments? There's a lot of flexibility in the EU regulatory framework to establish what we call, for instance, capacity mechanisms that would be using gas-fired capacity and be financed under EU law, but not directly from taxpayer funding, because there's a massive investment challenge. And now on the positive side, and that's my last sentence here, looking at the budget under negotiation, where we have been critical as Agora is that the stringency of the earmarking of the massive budget that's being negotiated for green purposes, it's not very stringent. On the other hand side, the opportunities from a national perspective to really use the next European budget to front load a lot of the needed investments into the green transition, there are many, many opportunities in the budget. It's just not obligatory from a budgetary perspective at this moment in time, setting aside the 30% climate earmarking. So in that sense, again, I think countries like Poland, countries like Romania have a massive opportunity to do the planning, identify the investment needs they do have for the clean transition and make use to the maximum extent of the next European budget for that transitional purposes. Thank you.
Pavel Sjosh, let me turn to you about this comment on gas. We heard Matthias Berg saying gas is not a solution. It shouldn't be seen as a transition fuel. There's a high risk that it ends up being a stranded asset, and therefore taxpayer money shouldn't be used for that. What is your reaction to this?
Our point of view, the point of view of our sector is that in between 2030 and 2050, we need gas as a bridging fuel. Please remember, don't forget about CHP technologies. Apart from producing electricity, we have also second pillar as a heating. We have we have winters, the same like in Germany or in Finland. So we are looking for gas as an enabler of renewable energy sources integration. We cannot make green investments like onshore and especially offshore on Baltic Sea in competitive procedures in very short time, for example, in 2 years. We need more time. So from this reason, we need gas as a bridging fuel to zero neutrality in 2050. That's the reason. Let me add one more thing to first question, because the increasing indirect goal from in 2030 from 55% to 65% of reduction is for our energy and power sector minimum additionally 40 billion euros. So of course we see measures and many possibilities of financing in many European funds, but for example when we are looking for details, for example details of the recovery and resilience facility as the first pillar of the next generation EU. So what do we see? We see very, very strict short term timeline of the proposed measure. For example, legal commitment before the end of 2023 and payments before the end of 2026. And for example, our investments, the most important investments in green transition in Poland, like offshore, need more time. So for this reason, we argue that for energy projects, the strict deadline should be relaxed to finance strategic investments such as offshore wind. So. So that's our statement. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And just a very quick follow-up. Matthias Berg was saying that taxpayer money shouldn't be used for gas as a bridging fuel. So do you think the private sector can cover that if at the end of the day there is no public money available?
I think yes, and in our new updated national energy policy, we can also see the gas investment in CHP and also plans for nuclear energy, but it. Of course, it will last more than 10 years.
Yeah, thank you for that. Let me turn now to a couple of questions from the audience. There was one early on from Florie Gosselin from CEFIC, the Chemical Industry Sector Association. It's a question for Mrs. De La Torre about the effort sharing. So she says ETS sectors will have to go to zero emissions well before sectors which are not covered by the ETS. Now, with the increased 2030 target, she's asking whether DG Clima has considered a split of the effort between ETS and non-ETS sector, which is more fair than it is currently. Clara De La Torre, do you have maybe views to share on that? Oh, Clara, you need to unmute yourself.
Oh, yes, yeah, sorry. I was saying that this is...
Go ahead,
this,
we can hear you, yes.
Thank you. I was saying this is a very important question, and we've been discussing, we're still discussing about that. As you know, it's foreseen in the program of the Commission, we are widening the scope of ETS, certainly to maritime and buildings, and we are working also for road transport. So I would say that from the outset, it's not because we are broadening the scope of ETS that we necessarily have to change the scope of or the shape of the ESR. But I should have reminded ourselves from the beginning that once we have this assessment and the proposal on the target for 2030, during next year, in particular around June next year, we will be making the necessary amended proposals for the existing legislation, precisely to see how the different parts of the puzzle fit together. And we are in this moment doing detailed impact assessments of the different initiatives, of the different legislative acts, precisely to see how they can be fit better the 2030 increased ambition. So no a priori. We are trying fonder our future proposals on as much as objective data and analysis as possible.
Thank you, Clara. I have no problem with French, by the way, so we can switch to that. Let me, maybe I was just going through the questions coming through the Q&A, quite a few obviously about coal and what Poland is planning to do. So I guess this would be a question for you, Pavel. Is there now, as Poland now moves towards updating its energy strategy, we heard the minister talking earlier just now. Is Poland now moving towards identifying a clear date for phasing out coal entirely? Pavel, is that something you think is now getting closer, and is there a date?
Is very that's a very delicate question. In our new strategy, now I mean PGE Capital Group, the biggest company in Polish energy sector, we will show those dates, but I cannot speak about details now before official announcement of our new strategy. So yes, all European Commission, all European Union will see our dates, but of course dates of closing plants or mines based on lignite or hard-fired coal will be strictly connected with measures for affected regions like Bełchatów or Śląsk. So it have to last years, because it's impossible to close close mines, for example, in 2-3 years. It's very similar way to German Energiewende. We are analyzing all details German way, but of course Polish situation is a little bit different because we have completely different starting point because of a framework of structure of our energy mix. 75% traditional fossil fuel in energy mix of Polish energy sector, but for example, in energy mix of PGE Capital Group, it's more over than 90% because our energy mix still is based on lignite. So we make a green transition also from economical reasons, from increasing prices of CO2 permits and very hard or maybe in closing future impossibility getting financing for investments which are concerning lignite and coal.
Thank you, Pavel. We have just 10 minutes ahead of us now. Let me introduce a subject we haven't dealt with already, which is the recovery plan and the budget deal that was agreed just before the summer. I think some of the speakers alluded to that. There's going to be 30% of a pretty large pot of money, which will be made available for climate-friendly investments. As you know, there's discussions now taking place at the member state level, for them to submit national plans for how this money will be used. So how prescriptive do you think the Commission needs to be when approving those plans? And of course, the member states will discuss this as well between themselves. Potentially, they will have a right of veto. So how prescriptive do you think the EU as a whole needs to be with those national plans? Clara de la Torre, maybe you can explain a bit what the Commission's approach is on this.
We are, you know that we have the European semester grounded in our economic cycle, which already has started embedding more explicitly sustainability questions. That's on one hand. We have also the national economic and energy and climate plans that are being finally evaluated now, the final evaluation of the final those. So now we are the third component. So the first thing that we need to make sure, all of us, is that these three strands, I'm sure there are others, but at least these three strands are coherent. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we know that one of the principles is that there is, and these have to be coherent, and of course these will be differently articulated in the different countries for the reasons we've been discussing some minutes ago. That's one thing. The second is that we are trying to get trying to be as knowledgeable as possible in the different member states, precisely when we will provide some guidance. I can't tell you exactly to which detail we'll be going, but this is also under discussion. But what is clear is that the main foundations of this program have to come from the member states. They know best how the situation is. They know best how the different actors, as Ms. Arma was saying, they need to know how each factory works, how each. And we have to be mindful from the Commission side, from the European Union institutions rather, I would say, that whatever investments are done are in line with the Paris Agreement, are in line with the different policy objectives. So I suppose we will be midway. I would expect that personally, yeah, I would expect that very concrete plans will come already, very concrete ideas will come already from the member states themselves.
Thank you, Clara.
And we are ready to help in whatever way we can, that's for sure.
Yep. Thank you, Clara. Maybe Matthias Buch, you can say a few words on that. How prescriptive do you think the EU needs to be when approving those national plans?
Yes, thank you. I do believe, of course, as Mr. Latorre said, that the responsibility for developing good plans is with the member states. It's very clear. It is nothing that you can dictate from Brussels and nothing that should be dictated from Brussels. But I think there's a responsibility, particularly for the Commission, as being responsible for our long-term trajectory, which is climate neutrality by 2050, to put out some clear guidance on clearly what would be beneficial. So what is really green? Perhaps underpin it with best practices. There are many, many interesting transition stories on the European continent that could be articulated and brought to the attention of those currently involved in the planning. But also on the other hand side, what is clearly inconsistent with long-term climate neutrality? So I would say a clear green priority list and a clear exclusion list would be very helpful for the member states to then work in that space and then see and identify the best priorities from their perspective on how to make use of this massive funding that is out there. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Matthias. Ville Niinistö, maybe a word from you on the recovery plans and the level of freedom and leeway you think should be left to the member states. What is your view on that, very briefly?
Yeah, I think it's obvious that when we put European money, stimulus money into the recovery, it has to be put into productive use. And I think the scientific and expert analysis is that climate investments, long-term investments are very productive and smart ways of creating jobs for Europe. So when we speak about cost of the transition, we have to remember that these investments are not solely costs, they are also about increasing competitiveness and creating jobs. So I think the climate conditionalities have to be very clear, but obviously also take into account the national history where you come from. And I actually have a long cooperation history with Poland. When I was Minister of the Environment, I discussed a lot with my colleague Marcin Korolec in Poland at that time. And for example, district heating that Poland does have quite a lot. In Finland, we have face a future now that 5 years from now, our main utilities in district heating will be carbon neutral. That has meant a lot of heavy investments in using industrial waste heat, using undercover storage also to turn windmill cheap energy into heat. So it's a storage issue as well. And I think these kind of like combining national energy and climate plans with smart plan on how the climate portion of the recovery fund is going to implement it. It's crucial in order also to increase productivity. And here we have a lot of fantastic chances also for Eastern Europe. So I think it's in their interest that we demand a lot, but we also take into consideration what are the national consequences.
Mm-hmm. Clotilde Armand, maybe a few words from you now about how prescriptive do you think the EU needs to be with the member states when it comes to the plans that will be submitted in the coming months?
I just wanted to mention that, first of all, two-thirds of this money will be borrowed. So a country like Romania, like Poland, it will have to give back two-thirds of the money that they've received. It's not completely public funds. It's some of it are borrowed money. I really believe in pragmatism and in technical assistance. We need more technical assistance from states which have managed their green transition to other states and generally across Europe. We will win in coherence, we will win in convergence, we will win in efficiency. Because in the parliament, I see that each MEP knows very well the situation of his home state and is believing in some of those prescriptions, but with his own experience, without knowing the reality, the field, the reality on the field in other states. We really need to be one continent to understand the issues and to our decisions and those prescriptions that you're talking about, they shouldn't be based on ideology, that should be based on knowing, on the knowledge of what is really on the field. And for this technical assistance that that I'm always promoting is a way to achieve this. So yes, we need some help. Yes, we need Europe to understand the reality of each state and to put some constraints, but not based on ideology, based on the knowledge of what the real situation on the field is for each population, each person in Europe.
Okay, thank you very much, Clotilde. I think we're reaching now the end of this conference. I will ask each one of you, maybe very briefly in 30 seconds or 1 minute, explain what your main message would be, your main takeaway from this conference, as we now move on to a new phase, a new political phase, where new targets are going to be approved for 2030. Clara De La Torre, maybe we can start with you.
Thank you. Listen, we are undergoing a horrible social and economic crisis. We will only succeed, I'm sure we will succeed, but for that, we need to stay united and mindful of where we want to go. And yes, address the very short-term problems, but keep in mind our direction of travel and take the decisions based on knowledge, on science, on facts, keeping in mind where we want to go. And I'm sure in that way we will succeed. Thank you.
Thank you, Clara. Villeneuve, very briefly, as we move on to this next phase of policymaking, quick thoughts from your side.
I think the key challenge is to have ambitious goals that actually create jobs and productivity, and we keep the business world and the member states involved in how we can get the best out of this investment together. There is going to be huge investment in the field of energy. We just have to make the best use of it for all of Europe.
Thank you, Clotilde Armand. A few thoughts maybe from you to conclude.
Yeah, we really believe in this green transition. We all want it, and even more the countries who have been less polluting than others. But we need this financial solidarity based on pragmatism, and we will achieve this by knowing each other much better.
Thank you. Matthias Berg, your turn now.
Thank you. We do need a clear linking of the EU budget discussion to the EU debate on raising ambition. And to make it practical, we would suggest that we do have what we call flagship project commitments as part of the budget deal making to really advance the green transition in the different sectors, be it the European coal phase out, being the faster pickup of electric mobility in Europe, or what Timmermans in particular is pushing, the renovation wave, to help accelerate significantly efficiency of the building stock. So linking the budget to the raising ambition debate, to me, is crucial at this point in time in a very serious manner.
Thank you. And now I'm turning to Pavel Sjors from PKE for a quick concluding thoughts as we move on to this next big stage of policymaking at the European level.
As a Polish sector, we also believe in green transition and zero neutrality in 2050, but we have a big challenge. So we are expecting help by dedicated measures from European Fund, which are correlated with our challenges, with our transformations, and with our different starting point. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much, Pavel. Thanks to PKE for supporting this event. Thanks to all of you who have joined online. Thanks to our panelists. For sure, we'll have plenty more of these sessions coming up in the coming months. dealing with the issue of climate neutrality and the 2030 targets. For sure, we'll be covering that on Euractiv as part of our regular news coverage. So stay with us and tune in for the next session. Thank you very much and have a good day.